If there were a world record award to give for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But even though MLB had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And we are here. We're planning on recording tonight's show regardless, but some news came in today that we would have probably had to hop on and do a show even if we hadn't planned on it. And that is that Tom Seaver has passed away at the age of 75. Tom Seaver is the greatest Met of all time by just about any metric that you would want to use. He is a player that, for an organization that doesn't often honor its players well enough in the eyes of fans, I think that Seaver is probably the most notable exception to that. Seaver has been the prototypical all-time Met since he stopped playing. He's been around the team as a broadcaster, as an ambassador, as a symbol of the Mets' greatness. You know, along with Mike Piazza, he is one of only two Mets to go into the Hall of Fame wearing a Mets cap. And you know, neither Chris nor I have memory of watching. I mean, I shouldn't speak for Chris. I presume you don't have any memory of watching Seaver pitch contemporaneously, do you?
I do not. I was here, but I wasn't old enough to have a memory yet. So
yeah.
I do not.
Yeah, same. I was born in 82, so, you know, those last few years, I was cognizant, but I was not monitoring baseball performance very well at that time in my life. So, you know, neither one of us have real experience watching him in real time, but, you know, watching him in dozens of Mets classics, watching highlights, reading about him, it's hard to not come away with the assessment, like I said before, that he's the greatest Met of all time. Do you have any qualms with that statement?
No. I mean, it's and especially because the main thing that I think about when I think about Seaver is the context that he's in. You know, he's not just that, and not that that's a bad thing to be, but he's one of the best pitchers to have ever pitched in baseball. And I do think that occasionally it might get lost on some people, not Mets fans.
Agreed. Yeah.
Certainly. But, you know, you talk about some of the really, really, like, greatest names in pitching history. And to me, you know, I mean, you can look at WAR with FanGraphs or Baseball Reference, and that's not a bad way to get an idea of things. But, you know, he'll show up high on those lists. But he really was one of the best pitchers of all time, especially from the point he made his debut until the Mets foolishly traded him away.
Yes. So the one thing I did want to point out was that growing up, Tom Seaver was the answer to a trivia question. It was, who has the highest percentage of votes to get into the Hall of Fame? And from his induction in 92 until Ken Griffey Jr. is in 2016, He was the answer. He had 98.84% of the votes against the Hall of Fame. That is the highest of any starting pitcher. He is behind only Mariano Rivera, Derek Jeter, and Ken Griffey Jr. The people directly below him are Nolan Ryan, Cal Ripken Jr., Ty Cobb, George Brett, Hank Aaron, Tony Gwynn, Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, Chipper Jones, Mike Schmidt, Johnny Bench, Steve Carlton, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, Ricky Henderson, Willie Mays, Carl Yastrzemski. I mean, the fact that he's above all of those folks in percentage of Hall of Fame ballots, that's not a perfect science by any means, but especially at the time that Seaver was inducted, the Hall of Fame was considered this like the one real Hall of Fame in sports. It was the one that was considered the highest bar to get into and the toughest to get into. And the fact that he had more votes than Babe Ruth to get in, or a higher percentage of votes rather than Babe Ruth to get in, is a pretty remarkable look at what people thought of him as a talent. And I think that's an important thing to discuss, like you said, Chris, outside of just being a Met, just how excellent he was overall.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And just another detail that was reported while you were just saying that, the official update was that Tom Seaver passed away from complications of Lewy body dementia and COVID-19. So, you know, this virus is both of us living in the Northeast, and presumably most people listening to this living in the Northeast, you know, it's hit everybody on a personal level, and you know, none of us knew Tom Seaver personally, but you know, we've had, you know, family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, you know, suffer from or pass away from this virus. And, mm-hmm. you know, just seeing that it contributed to Seaver's passing, just, you know, just another reason why it is awful.
Wear a fucking mask.
Yep.
Sorry.
Please. I assume most people listening are, because one, they read and listen to Amazing Avenue, and two, they live in the Northeast, and overall, people have been very good about that here, but yeah.
Yeah. It's just an absolutely heartbreaking situation, you know. Chris and I were talking before we started to record that, you know, the Mets had renamed the street that Citi Field, at least the mailing address, is now Seaver Way, and there's been plans to build a statue to Tom Seaver. He's one of only three retired Met numbers. It's still three, right? Not counting Jackie Robinson?
Right. Well, two Mets players, and then Stengel and Hodges.
Yeah. Oh, so it's four. So four total, but yeah, two players. Yeah, just absolutely tragic. I wish I had more words to say. I wish I had the time I saw Tom Seaver pitch a one hitter story, but I just don't have that. You know, that was not part of our Mets fandom.
Right. I mean, we did have, in terms of things we got to see and remember, you know, the ceremonial pitch.
The last pitch at Shea / first at Citi.
Yes. Yeah. The ceremonial pitches, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, those moments, the All-Star game at Citi Field, you know, when he made his appearance, and certainly some memories of him in the broadcast booth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know. But his, from the limited memory and then just knowledge I have, of Mets history and all that, certainly just his performance as a pitcher and knowing what he meant to the team, and Mets fans that came before us, you know, it was pretty significant to say the least. So,
yeah.
Very sorry to hear it. And
yeah, you know, I wish we had more to say. I wish I had more personal experience to share. I do remember Seaver as a broadcaster. I believe he stopped broadcasting shortly before SNY, correct?
I think that was the timeline of it. Yeah.
I remember him watching him on WPIX games, with, gosh, was it? I should know this. I watched enough of those damn games. I should know it. Fran Healy, maybe? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was around with Healy when he was doing broadcasts. Yeah.
Yeah, he did Mets broadcast from 1999 to 2005. Yeah. All right. I mean, you know, just an absolute shame. We think that. I mean, I would think that you're going to see a lot of Seaver footage on the broadcasts the next few days, which is what it should be, absolutely. And you know, Seaver footage is always kind of in the back pocket of Mets broadcasts, because anytime any pitcher did something remarkable, the Met you usually compare him to is Tom Seaver. So it's not like we haven't seen a lot of Seaver footage, but you're going to be seeing a lot over the next few days. And you know, it obviously goes without saying that we send our condolences to his family, to his friends, to his former teammates, and to Mets fans everywhere. You know, this is one of the ones that really hurts. And you know, if I had one wish for all this, I wish he could have participated in the 69 celebration last year, because obviously that is the season that Mets fans will forever associate with him. And he was such an important part of that team, and you could tell he loved being a part of the 69 celebrations whenever they happened. I wish he was able to get one more of those in. But that's, you know, that's obviously a small piece of what's a larger-than-life, you know, career and life as a human being. So, again, our condolences to Seaver's family, friends, and fans. And there will likely never be another pitcher like him. And so, Godspeed, Tom Seaver. Should we talk about Steve Cohen?
Sure. Slight change of gears.
Yeah, just a slight change of pace there. But yeah, there's going to be a new owner in Mets land. There's going to be a new owner. It looks like Steve Cohen, by all reports, has won the bidding and appears to have enough votes of ownership. I believe he needs to get 23 of 29 owners to vote for him to be the new primary owner of the New York Mets. Reportedly, $2.38 billion, I believe, is the cost he is paying for majority share in the Mets. I know the Wilpons are keeping 5% of the team, and I believe all the people that bought in, remember, maybe it was in the early aughts, sorry, the early teens, people like Bill Maher all bought a minority share in the team. Do you remember that, Chris?
Yep.
I believe those ownership stakes are not for sale. I believe they're staying with their owners. So I'm not sure what his exact percentage will be, but he will be by far the majority owner of the Mets. And, you know, I think it's very hard to praise a new owner because you have no idea what they're going to be like. But by all accounts, this should end the Mets' more miserly ways, at least for a little bit of time. What are your initial thoughts on Steve Cohen being the owner of the Mets?
Well, there's a sense of relief. You know, obviously we don't know exactly what Cohen is going to do. At this point, it seems like it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that it'll go through. So we don't know exactly what he's going to do, but we know he won't be the Wilpons. And
yeah,
that's a significant thing. It's very hard to really say anything, you know, with any kind of confidence about what he'll be like as an owner. But you have to think it's promising, being that he's a Mets fan, being that he is, you know, made of money at this point.
Yeah.
In a baseball sense, it has to be a good thing that somebody who is in that financial position and cares about the team would be willing to spend money on it, because, you know, it's not just, oh, we want the Mets to have the highest payroll in baseball every year. But there have just been so many instances under the Wilpons' ownership, especially their sole ownership. You know, when Doubleday's portion of the team was bought out, where just spending money on things that were obviously good for the team seemed to be an issue. And, you know, they've made significant signings. But they usually think they're bad in the end. You know, Carlos Beltran was one of their biggest contracts, Yoenis Cespedes. More recently, David Wright, even though it was a very team-friendly deal and he was very good until his back made it impossible for him to keep playing. They've had those contracts. They've made some splashes in free agency. And it's not just about doing that, but you would just have to hope that someone coming in Cohen's shoes would have a better approach to doing things that cost money and are smart and good for the team. So Michael Conforto getting extended to stick around.
Marcus Stroman.
That would be, totally. That would be a great way to make a good first impression. So we'll see. But, you know, it's anything is possible, but it's hard to imagine that the state of the Mets will not improve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my primary hope in terms of what he will do or not do is I hope he just stays out of things a little bit better than Jeff Wilpon did. You know, it seems to me like the best owners in baseball recognize that their job is not to be the general manager, that their job is to be the owner. And when you see people tending to just butt in too much, bad things happen. I mean, Jeff Wilpon hasn't had a disgrace under his name since last week. So, you know, his idea to go out there and take the field and then walk off and then come back an hour later. If the statements are to be believed, that was his wonderful idea for what the Mets should do last week. So, you know, Jeff Wilpon has disgraced this team enough times that if Cohen just keeps his mouth shut and stays in the background, I will be more than happy. But, you know, like you said, the Mets have not had incredibly high payrolls the last number of years, nor are we calling for that. But they've just had, because of the Madoff scandal, because of so many reasons, they just have not even been attempting to be competitive in certain free agent markets. And I think that this season has been a really interesting just sort of petri dish to observe what the Mets are as a team right now and to see what they need, to see what they have. And I think that for the first time in a long time, I think it's pretty clear exactly what the Mets need going forward for the next couple of years. And I was worried that under the Wilpons they wouldn't get that, even though it's crystal clear what that is. So I'm hoping that under Cohen, they're able to spend money when they need to plug the holes that their team has.
Right.
So that's, you know, again, I don't anticipate this being somebody who is necessarily who's going to revolutionize the way baseball is being done. I just want somebody who's going to let the Mets spend some money when need be. Now here's a very cynical Met question for you, Chris. How long of a leash does Cohen have before the first like back page headline against him?
I don't know. I mean, if he stays relatively quiet and, you know, there's nothing scandalous going on, I'd actually give it like a year or two. I mean, well, I guess the over-under, I would have to be much lower than that, but I'll say it's a year or two before anybody sours on him. I think he gets a honeymoon phase where people are just going to be, you know, embracing that he's not a Wilpon. So, you know, whatever he's doing is better than what had come before. But I think the only thing that would guarantee that it would happen sooner would be a complete teardown, trading away great players on the team, coming in and trying to do a full rebuild, that kind of a thing. That then I think it would turn quickly. But depending on exactly when he takes control of the team and whether or not he makes significant changes to the front office immediately, then I would say as long as the offseason isn't one that the Mets just sit out completely, then he's got like a year of a honeymoon phase. Do you think that's even possible?
I don't know. I've been sitting here thinking about it. So I think what's going to happen is if the Mets can land, I'm going to say if they can land JT Realmuto and a and whoever is considered one of like the top four or five starting pitchers next year, then I think he's bought himself that year grace period. But I think if, and this may not be his fault. I mean, it looks now like the sale may not be official until November. And so, you know, I don't know how fast he's going to be able to do anything as owner, you know. But if he can facilitate the Mets signing a number of quality free agents, I think he'll get a grace period. I think it's going to be very hard for him to do that if he dismisses Van Wagenen outright initially. I think that, you know, just to get to fire a general manager in November seems like a very bad move. And I can't see the Wilpons necessarily firing him in September because they would be basically leaving Cohen in a terrible position to find a new general manager or they would get to hire the next general manager for a guy, for an ownership group that they're not really involved with. So I think that keeping Van Wagenen around for a year is an important piece of him being able to even compete for the friendship and kindness of Mets fans for the next year. But I think if for some reason the Mets just blank on all their free agents, I think you're going to see a lot of, oh, same old story, new owners, still cheapskates, all that stuff, which is really frustrating. But I think if he can get through this offseason, he'll be okay. Do you think there's any chance Van Wagenen is not there next year?
Well, yeah, there's certainly some chance that he's not there. I guess the majority of our Maison Avenue crew and Mets fans would probably expect that he won't be. I won't be shocked if he is retained, whether it's for a short or long term, I don't know. But if that official control doesn't change, change hands until November, it would be an awkward or difficult time to implement an entirely new front office.
Yeah.
I think you could bring new voices into the room if you took over at that point and then make that change. So, yeah, I'm not exactly making bold predictions here, but I don't know. I don't know that it's automatic that Van Wagenen would be gone, like a lot of people think would be the case. And whatever your assessment is of his transactions as a general manager, it'll be interesting to see, even if Cohen does want to go a new direction and have somebody else run baseball operations, whether or not the Mets maintain this sort of keeping everybody in the family approach that they've had over the years. You know, Terry Collins, Omar Minaya are among the names of people who had significant positions within the organization. And then either immediately or a little bit down the road were brought back into the fold. So it'll be interesting to see if that sort of institutional inertia maintains itself.
Sure.
With the organization or not. And in the context of Van Wagenen, although he doesn't have nearly as much history as either of those two names that I mentioned, does Cohen come in and maybe find a new president of baseball operations, but decide that Van Wagenen is good at certain aspects of going out, speaking to the press, sort of being the face of the front office, that, you know, that kind of stuff. And bring in people and then keep him in a role that is still public facing. But maybe he's not ultimately in charge of the moves that are happening.
Sure.
With the roster. So, I mean, there's two options when somebody takes over in a situation like this, right? Either one, clean house, and everybody from the manager up to the owner gets replaced, or you know, bring in some people that you really know and either know or trust to be good people for the organization and sort of transition with the existing staff and the new people. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe it's just going to be a complete teardown and it's that simple and I'm overthinking it, but I won't be shocked if there's something a little more gradual.
Yeah, it seems to me like, you know, most businesses will say if, you know, a new boss comes in, observe things for a little while. See what's working and what's not working before you just clean house.
Right.
So that would be a wise thing to do. But I also understand that there's a certain stink of the Wilpons all over everything. And if you wanted to just run away from that screaming, I totally understand that as well.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. It's also, you and I have talked about this, maybe not on the show, but certainly, you know, we've talked about it before, just the two of us, how it's hard to get excited over any hedge fund manager coming in to be the owner. That's not exactly the most well-respected, in my world, type of person. You know, hedge fund managers typically are... I mean, Steve Cohen has had a number of fines and other penalties put on him for unfair business practices. And, you know, he seems like a relatively shady businessman in some ways. But I feel like that's pretty much who buys sports franchises at this point. And so you're never going to get, like, you know, who would my ideal... rich, like the richest guy I can think of that isn't a total shithead is probably Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. Like if Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld bought the Mets, that'd be great, right? But you're never yes. gonna get that. You're never gonna get. It's always gonna be some hedge fund dork who has a ton of money and got it through nefarious means. So I can't be too excited about Cohen on that level. I'm trying to go in with an open mind about him and not just judge him because of what he does for a living. But you know. If you've got $2 billion to spend on a hobby, you're doing fine. You don't need my approval.
Yeah.
If there were a world record for world's greatest delay of game, it would definitely go to 2020. But here's the thing. Even if your MLB team got to take a break, your business didn't. And hiring has to keep moving, even when the game stops. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because it connects you to the best candidates fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you payment flexibility and full control over your hiring, so you only pay for what you need. Plus, you can pause your account at any time and there are no long-term contracts. Indeed also gives you powerful tools to make your search easier, like sponsored job posts, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month. Maybe that's why over 3 million companies have trusted Indeed to help bring on the important hires that keep your business moving. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/SBMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/SBMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Well, whether or not Brody is the GM next year, he certainly was busy at the trade deadline this year. The Mets brought in three players at the trade deadline, not giving up anybody of real note for them. They have their number 12 prospect based on the Amazing Avenue list. We'll talk about him in just a minute. But for the Mets traded two players to be named later and cash for a couple of Texas Rangers in separate trades somehow. I think it's very strange that both were separate trades, even though no actual Mets were named in the trades. But the Mets traded for... Todd Frazier. I don't know if you guys are aware of this or not. He's from New Jersey. And also catcher Robinson Chirinos. And let's talk about these two trades first. I think that just about everybody felt that the Mets needed to do something at catcher because Tomas Nito is not back yet. It seems like he might have been hit pretty hard by COVID-19. Wilson Ramos has started to hit a little bit in the past few days, but has been a real disappointment so far this season. Ali Sanchez did not impress during his time behind the dish. I'm forgetting another Mets catcher, aren't I, who caught this year?
Rene Rivera?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about him. He's on the 45-day IL, but there's somebody else who caught like last week, wasn't there?
Well, Mazika never got into a game.
Oh, that's true. Mazika was on the roster and didn't get into the game. That's what I was thinking of. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The entirety of, like, the Amazon Avenue era of covering Mets minor league catchers has been present. Like, I feel like the first time I went to spring training, Mazika and Sanchez were both guys who were on the radar.
Right.
And that was, unfortunately, a little while ago now.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, do Chirinos or Frazier, do either of them get you excited at all?
Well, Chirinos is a guy who, I mean, he's got five seasons in a row of being an above league average hitter. And that's rare from a catcher these days. And in that sense, he does get me excited. Certainly not the biggest acquisition by any means, but he's somebody who it would have been nice to see the Mets bring in over the winter. And I think someone who can give them some good, you know, production at that position. So I like that move. Frazier is fine. You know, he generally seems like a likable teammate and a good influence in that sense. And, you know, he's more or less established who he is as a player. You know, you can't get too, I'm guilty of getting like very high on the good performances by Mets players this year, just because they're fun. But we shouldn't overreact to anybody's stats over the first month of this season, especially right under the circumstances. So, you know, he has pretty solidly been the same hitter. He's a slightly older version of that same hitter, but guy who's got some power in his bat and isn't really going to have a great batting average or great on-base percentage, but capable major league hitter. So, yeah, you know, and I don't know. I enjoyed... He was never like, oh, man, I'm excited to watch Todd Frazier when he was with the Mets for the last 2 years. But I enjoyed his presence overall, you know?
I have almost nothing to add to what you said. Frazier is fine. You know, as a guy from New Jersey, I have to root for him. It is actually in my property taxes. I get fined if I do not root for Todd Frazier. You know, if he gives Davis a little bit of time to heal up, the word is that Davis has been playing a little bit hurt lately. So if they can start him at third base a couple of times and let Davis either play left field or DH a little bit, that's fine. You know, I don't think he's going to be a major part of the team, even though he did start the game today and went, I believe, 0 for 4, 0 for 5 in the game. You know, it's fine. It's a fine move. Chirinos, you know, I wish the Mets had brought in, if you're going to bring in a backup catcher, I feel like bringing in a backup catcher who has a different skill set than your primary catcher is the way to go. But like Ramos, he's a bat first catcher. Like Ramos, he has had a very slow start to the season. I'm not trying to put too much stock in numbers for the season so far because, as we've established, who knows what the season numbers will look like overall, and, you know, it's been a weird season. But, you know, it's fine. If they gave up anybody of note for Chirinos, I'd be a little bit more upset about the deal, but I'm not. It's fine. It is what it is. I think the more interesting trade is one we haven't talked about yet, which is Miguel Castro, the relief pitcher coming over from the Orioles for Mets prospect Kevin Smith. I am a little bit upset. I'm not going to get a chance to recap a game and put like Snoochie Boochies as the headline because of a Kevin Smith joke. But other than that, you know,
well, the The best thing is that Kevin Smith, the pitcher, would have absolutely made his first major league start in some strange circumstance where I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Exactly.
Like, I have no doubt that could have been used when they made him get out there for the first time, probably in like mid-September in a game that meant a lot.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, all of the Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy references that are lodged in my brain from teenage years spent in New Jersey, again, will go to waste. But, you know, Castro is a really interesting pitcher. He's a very hard thrower. He's had a little bit of trouble with control over the course of his career, but this season he's been walking less and striking out more. He's a legit piece of this bullpen, and he's under team control for a couple more years after this. This is a really good trade for the Mets potentially. Do you have any initial thoughts on this move?
Well, yeah. Aside from the inability to make those jokes and run with that, you know, I don't. It's not a knock on him, but I don't think anybody really had put stock in him like he was. You know, a surefire top prospect in all baseball kind of guy. He was somebody who was coming up. And I know Jacob DeGrom is sort of the complete counter to this. I'm not saying they were rated equally at their times in the minors, but, you know, not somebody who was supposed to come up and dominate and have a shot at being a top of the rotation pitcher. That kind of a guy. I think the Mets they've had a collection of guys who might be capable major league pitchers, but I don't know. If you went back like 5 or 10 years, I would probably be skeptical that somebody had shown a change in their game like Castro has, and say, oh, okay, all right, that's promising. It is a small sample size, but something over the last few years that has at least somewhat changed that mindset. I think you can keep it in that context of saying, okay, it's only this many games, this many innings, but maybe there's something there. I'd like to think of it in my mind as like the Justin Turner lesson.
Right.
When they non-tendered him, I thought absolutely nothing of it. And, I mean, to be fair, I still think up to the point that he was done being a Met, he had not really shown signs of breaking out. But the way his career went after that, I became a little more open to a guy having a breakout, even though he had some major league experience that wasn't great, but then turning a corner. So for a guy who throws hard and has improved his strikeout and walk rates a lot this year, albeit in a pretty short span of time, I'm very comfortable with the Mets parting ways with Smith.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
And Castro was kind of fun to watch tonight, you know, or this afternoon or evening, against his team that he was just traded from in a very lopsided game at that point. But
yes,
yeah,
yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a pretty fun look. The Mets bullpen is one of those things that I mentioned earlier in the show that to me it's very clear what the Mets need going forward. And I feel like a bullpen facelift is one of those things, absolutely. And, you know, bringing in a guy like this who's young and under team control, I don't see a downside. Unless you really, truly believed that Kevin Smith had a role in this bullpen beyond what, or on this team, rather, you know, either in the bullpen or as a back of the rotation starter, unless you felt that guy was a lock for that, if the Orioles are willing to take that risk on this cost controlled piece that has a lot of upside, to me, you make this move every time. especially because he could realistically help the Mets this year and for the future. Whereas I don't think Smith is going to really help the Mets very much this year. And I understand that. I think the front office, knowing that Cohen is coming in, maybe feels a little bit more urgency to win out the rest of the season a little bit more, to maybe improve their chances of sticking around. So this does feel more like a win now move than I thought the team would have maybe done at the deadline. But like we've said so many times this season, the Mets could play terribly from this point out and still maybe make the playoffs. You just don't know. So a move that can bring in a potentially exciting young player, to me, you have to do that move. It's just it. It's just what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of the framing of it was, oh, okay, they brought in these three guys. How much are they going to help them this year? But I don't know. If I had a bet right now, I'd say this team is not going to make the playoffs based on how it's played. But every game in this season is pretty meaningful, and the standard is so lax to get in. I wouldn't bet on it, but it's possible.
Well, let's talk about how the team has played so far. When we were chatting before the show, you mentioned how bad the Mets have been playing lately. And I'm not here to tell you the Mets have not been playing bad. But I think that the Mets have been playing in a very up-and-down way. You know, you look at the Mets won in dramatic fashion the first two games against the Yankees. They lost Saturday's game, you know, pretty definitively. And then Sunday, the Mets twice let leads get away and let the game slip away. But I think that for the most part, the Mets this weekend had a lot of spunk, had a lot of good happen despite a mixed weekend series with the Yankees. I think that this week until today, you know, the first two games this week were much more pathetic than we've seen as of late. But today the Mets looked dominant, even though Waka did not look very good to start.
Right.
You know, I think it's hard to even say the Mets have been playing poorly lately. I think that there have been some really bad individual pitching performances we've seen so far. But I think the team itself it wouldn't surprise me if the Mets went on a 6 or 7 game win streak, is what I'm saying. I don't think anything is stopping them from doing that as long as they don't have the meltdowns that we've seen a couple of their players have as of late.
Right. But yeah, the Sunday afternoon, the first game of that doubleheader, that game was sloppy throughout, and that sort of struck to your core as a Mets fan of just, oh man, like that hurt. I didn't watch much of the second game. I'm not usually one to, you know, turn off the Mets when they're playing baseball, especially in a year like this when we should not take that for granted. But I needed a little breather.
Same.
The opening day experience where I was trying to, okay, like let's adjust to this and make myself get into this and all that, that feeling was long gone. So in a way, it was sort of refreshing to be that frustrated with a Mets game, because it's been a while. But yeah, if the season doesn't go well in the end, I would point to that game as maybe one of the crucial turning points of the season. But if they win 4 more or 5 more games in a row coming off their win tonight in Baltimore, then they're in, you know, they're not the Dodgers, but they're right there in it. And it's possible. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I've been a little more down on the way they played. The fact that Saturday was Hap and they couldn't do anything against him, and then that game and both doubleheader games went to extra innings, and every single time it felt like, oh, well, they're going to lose, and then they did. Those things combined with just the Marlins loss, the Orioles loss, I don't know. I didn't wake up feeling optimistic about the Mets today. But two or three more wins between Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Two or three more wins in a row, maybe four if we're lucky. Then I'm starting to feel a little bit different. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's very hard to know what this – I feel like until the last day of the season, I'm going to have no idea how this season's going to go. It's just so volatile and so weird. We mentioned him briefly before, but have you heard anything about Nito?
No, I mean, I kind of took the Torinos trade as a possible indication that Nito had been hit with COVID, if we're assuming at this point. He's the only player who's been out since the Mets' COVID break. So if we're assuming it's him, I sort of thought, similar to what you had said earlier, that maybe he had a relatively rough go of it, and that's why they picked up Chirinos. I mean, I could see that happening even if Nito was around and on the active roster over the past couple weeks, but yeah. Certainly crossed my mind. So, and I don't know what to make of Nito's performance this year. The ultimate small sample. It's been very good, but I just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. I wish that the Mets had the chance to play Nito more this season to get a better sense of who he is as a player. But that obviously didn't happen. So, all right. Well, before we get into our music picks, this question popped in my head earlier today. And, you know, I have some friends who are Mets fans who are usually of the more casual variety. But every now and then I'll get a text from a friend that'll ask a question. And my friend asked me a question this week that I thought is worth sharing on the podcast. And that is, do you think that there's anything that this roster of the Mets can do that their roster isn't currently doing? Like, for instance, is there a way for this team, in through managerial moves or playing people, sitting people, shifting positions, etc., is there one glaring thing, Chris, that you see that the Mets stopped doing it or started doing it tomorrow would have a great impact on their season?
Not really. I mean, the bad part of the rotation has been so bad. So I guess if I had to pick an answer for that question, it would just be Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha having a 5 ERA instead of a 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever the hell.
Right.
They're at. I that would be my biggest thing. That and Edwin Diaz coming in with men on base. Don't do that anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, what about you?
To me, it was just pitching performance. It was rather pitching decisions. Like, look, I get it. I don't think David Peterson's going to win a Cy Young Award, right? But I don't understand why he was demoted to the bullpen when Rick Porcello is still walking around as a starting pitcher. I just think that the team has been making some weird pitching decisions. You know, he said bring in Diaz with men on base. Not knowing when to cut bait with certain people in a performance. You know, not just saying, all right, you're done. Give me the ball. So I think that just a slightly more improved just decision-making for pitching, not necessarily even – I mean, obviously you want performances to be better. I'm not saying that. But you can't mandate that. But to me, you would be able to just make some slightly better decisions from how you're using your pitching staff, and I think things could be marginally better. But I don't know. Someone on my Twitter timeline just shared a picture of Andy Warhol and Tom Seaver, and that makes me happy. So it is Seaver as a Red, though, so I take it with a grain of salt. but anyway, Chris, what is your music pick for this week?
So I'm pretty sure I did not do this on a podcast yet, based on when I got into them and what our podcast schedule has been over the summer. But Australian punk band called The Chats, and they put out a record earlier this year called High Risk Behavior, and they're just young punk band, pretty traditional if I, you know, had to describe the music, but they've got a couple really good catchy songs, and yeah, it's just a fun record. Best song on the album to me is called Identity Theft. It's track 4, and it has been stuck in my head for most of the pandemic because despite having been into a lot of Australian bands and music over the last few years, I actually found out about The Chats by either Discover Weekly or just a Spotify radio. I think it was Discover Weekly, but one of those things that Spotify presented it to me because it fit with stuff that I like.
Right.
Fancy terms here, but but yeah, check
it out. I was trying to find out if there was a term for, like, you know how an Anglophile is someone who loves all things British? I was trying to find out if there was a term for, like, Australiaphile.
Yeah. But there might be.
I couldn't find one with a quick Google search, so I was going to call you that, but I can't.
Yes. Oh, I appreciate that. But yeah, the record gets off to a really good start for the, like, right from track 1. But there's some AC/DC in there, not musically so much, but just sort of the young, like, I don't know, young brashness of it. If that makes any sense, that
sure.
It's nice to have a little spiritual connection. And just looking at it now on Spotify too, it's 14 songs, 28 minutes long. That is, you know, not quite Minutemen-esque, but it fits in. You know, short songs can be a lot of fun.
I promise you we didn't plan this, listeners.
I did not know whatever you're about to say.
My pick is a band that I heard. There's a podcaster named Stephen Hayden who's currently doing 3 music podcasts, 2 weekly and 1 every 2 weeks. The every 2 weeks one I've mentioned on the show before. It's called 36 from the Vault. It's a look back at Dick's Picks, all the Dick's Picks series and the Grateful Dead. One of them is called Rivals, which is about music rivalries, which is super fun. And there's one called IndieCast, which is about new music. And I heard him mention this on, I don't know if it was him or his co-host, Ian Cohen, who mentioned this, but it's a band called Second Grade. They're from Philadelphia. The album's called Hit to Hit. It's 24 songs in 41 minutes. I believe the longest song on the album is like just over 3 minutes, like 309 or 310, yeah. But some of them are less than a minute long, and it kind of reminds me of like a Guided by Voices thing, where they're just these like perfect pop songs played like by a power pop or a punk, or I don't, you know, just sort of melodic punky rock band. But each of them are these perfect little songs, and you know, on one hand you wish that they were twice as long because they're really catchy and really fun. On the other hand, they're absolutely perfect as they are. There's one song specifically called Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider that I really, really like. And the lyrics are just like, the chorus is like Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider. And then he names maybe Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider. Like, the lyrics are about the different actors in Easy Rider. But it's excellent. It's really fun. And I've actually been writing a lot of really short songs lately. And when I found this, I was like, oh, this is sort of like similar to what I've been doing. And now you have given me another band to listen to doing short songs. So that's fun. So yeah, you can listen to probably both. What's the name of the album again, Chris, you gave us?
High Risk Behavior by The Chats.
Yeah, I'm just looking something up here. So you can listen to both of our albums in just over an hour, about an hour and 10 minutes, and you get 38 songs in that time. So in the time it takes you to listen to The Wall by Pink Floyd, you can get 3 times as many songs here.
There you go.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you folks for listening. We, as always, appreciate it. I would love to see Mets fans and Amazing Avenue readers pouring out their love for Tom Seaver this week. So, you know, if you have any fun Tom Seaver stories, share them, you know, on Twitter and tag us or post in our comments. Just, you know, let's all be talking about Tom Terrific, about the franchise, you know, just the greatest Met ever. Let's keep that conversation going. He's far too important to stop talking about just a few days after his passing. So let's please keep that up. You can keep that up with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Please rate, review, and subscribe to it. Those things help other people find out about this show and all of our amazing shows. Right now, we have had just an Iron Man streak of From Complex to Queens going every single week without break. And I'm proud of those guys for doing that. Of course, we also have Unformatable. We also have A Pod of Their Own. And we're working on maybe some fun guests for some future In Conversation episodes. So stay tuned for that. You can follow Chris on Twitter, at Chris McShane. I am at Brian Needs a Nap. And we'll return next time to talk more about the Mets. And until then, as always...